Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Now to Libya, and we want to speak with someone we actually haven't spoken with for a little while. John Lyne is a Middle East correspondent for our partner, the BBC. He joins us from Benghazi, where rebels are beginning plans to move from Benghazi to Tripoli to actually take over governance. John Lyne, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So we hear a little delay on your line there, but your voice is sounding nice and strong. I wonder, I actually heard you in a discussion with one of your BBC colleagues yesterday describing how this notion of tribalism in Libya has really been overplayed in a sense by the media, and that your expectation is a much smoother transition to governance for the rebels. And I'm wondering if you could explore that a little bit. Where do you get the evidence for that?
Well, I've always been fairly optimistic about Libya. I mean, everybody here will tell you, okay, I'm listening to the opposition all the time, so I may be getting their side of the story, that a lot of the tribal divisions were played up by Colonel Gaddafi for his own ends. And conversely, they can be useful. You know, there are tribal loyalties, and those were used, for example, when they kicked out Gaddafi's forces here right at the beginning of the revolution. As far as the country is concerned, in many ways, I think Libya is better placed than any of the other Middle Eastern countries that so far kicked out their rulers, because they're doing a thorough job of it. I mean, in Egypt, you still got a battle with the army, who are still in place, who still always had a lot of the power and still have a lot of the power. Equally, in Tunisia, you've got similar issues. Whereas here, you know, it's going to be, for better or for worse, it's going to be ground zero. It's going to be day zero, you know, like Cambodia. They're going to be starting from nothing. And that could be good or bad, but they would have got rid of, once they've got rid of them, all of the old regime. And they've got an opportunity then to rebuild a country which has substantial, obviously, assets, literally financial assets abroad, potential to get the oil pumping very quickly. And I've certainly found an awful lot of very smart, intelligent, educated people committed to running this country in a better fashion than it was before.
And to diverge from the comparison to Cambodia, it is a start from zero, but without the wholesale slaughter of millions, the Holocaust that took place in Cambodia, Libya does not have to deal with that, and that's certainly an advantage. The Transitional National Council announced plans to hold elections in 8 months. Do you think they can meet that deadline?
It's a problem. I don't think this country has ever had elections in any shape or form. I'm not an expert on the last 100 years of the country's existence, but you're not just having reviving an old process. It's never happened before. So you've got to think, what are the districts going to be? Are you going to have districts? Are you going to have a nationwide election, and so on and so forth? And then the different political forces have got to kind of group themselves and get themselves organised, which is the thing that's slowing things down as well in Egypt. Who knows? I think the main thing, almost more important than that, is that they introduce a credible government as soon as possible. That is to say, an inclusive one that persuades the people in the west of the country, in Tripoli in particular, that this is not just a kind of Benghazi takeover. I think a lot of people here don't have 100% confidence in Mustafa Abdul Jalil, the head of the opposition, as the new interim president, or whatever they want to call it. Whether he does emerge as the new leader or whether somebody else in the opposition emerges, I think we'll have to see in the coming days and weeks. He's certainly not a very charismatic figure. Maybe they don't want one after Colonel Gaddafi's 42 years. So the actual top figures there are not, on the face of it, very impressive. But beneath them, I've met a lot of very, very sound professional people who are committed to getting this country organised. A lot of people who come back from the United States, for example. A lot of Libyans who've moved there because this just wasn't the kind of country they'd want to live in. So there's a lot of potential, and there's a lot of pitfalls as well. The immediate one is they need money. They urgently need billions of dollars of cash so they can restart the power generation and the oil industry and get petrol going. And although they've got loads of money in the bank around the world in these frozen assets, it's slightly more complicated actually freeing it up quickly and getting it to the right people.
Well, you note a couple of interesting things there. There seems to be a much better relationship between expatriates from Libya and the locals than there ever was in Iraq, where expatriates really didn't get any traction. And so that cooperation could be definitely positive. The Arab League has recognized this Transitional National Council. That's not an endorsement of Jalil as much as it is the rebellion broadly, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's a very important move, because if you remember right at the beginning of this, or fairly near the beginning of this process, it was the Arab League's endorsement of the idea of military intervention, a no-fly zone, that then meant basically that unrolled through the UN and then NATO, and the NATO military action started. And without that, we would not be where we are today. So again, I think that could be a crucial step in the next process of getting a legitimate government in place, unfreezing the assets, giving them money and so forth. Because once you've got the Arab League saying that, and although it's a fairly toothless body usually, diplomats who want to move this thing on, you know, Western diplomats, American, British and so forth, can then go around, they go to the Russians, they can go to the Chinese, they can go to the South Africans and whoever and say, look, this is what the Arabs want. They've got Arab support. Are you really going to go against the whole Arab world? It's not going to do you any good if you do. You're not going to get their old contracts in future if you're seen as standing out against the will of both the Libyans and the Arab peoples in general. So it's quite a powerful tool that was used to great effect by the diplomats when they got that no-fly resolution back through in, March of this year.
Indeed, and it increases the momentum diplomatically for things to move forward for the rebels. John Lyne of the BBC, describe if you could, and I heard a little bit of this from you yesterday, but it was actually pretty compelling. In a sense, the credibility of the rebellion involves their ability to translate the relative peace and calm in Benghazi over the last 6 months to Tripoli. Describe what it's been like under this city hall rebellion in Benghazi, which is now going to govern the entire nation.
Well, I mean, it's been, for all the talk of divisions, it's been remarkably successful. As far as I'm aware, the lights never went out here, despite the fact that the Libyan government, Colonel Gaddafi's government, turned off the gas supply over here. They managed to get diesel in to power the generator here in Benghazi, and I've never seen a power cut here since I've been here. Law and order was maintained on the streets straight away. In fact, in many ways, it was shown that the forces, the so-called force of law and order under Colonel Gaddafi, were the opposite. They were the ones making the problems, and as soon as they went away, order was and has been pretty constant. I mean, there's talk of some disorder in the suburbs here. I haven't seen anything for myself. I've heard very little evidence of it. And I've also seen in the 6 months since I first came here, they definitely got their act together more. Just for example, going through the border with Egypt, the first time we went through there, it was kind of delightful chaos. This time they've got uniforms and they've got name badges on. They're looking like a proper military force.
John Lyne, great details. Middle East correspondent for our partner in the BBC, live there from Benghazi. Thanks, John.